Well,
wow, that was incredible.
That's how it happened, Matt. But right, what was so amazing, when the record came out, you know, weeks later, I didn't recognize who it was. I kept hearing this record, Lord and Miss Claude, and Okie Dokie was burning it down. By time, he's now the biggest jockey around New Orleans.
And you got his catchphrase.
Yes, he's got our, and I'm just hearing Lord and Miss Claude. I don't know who it is because I'd never heard myself.
Did you think you were ripped off? Somebody was singing your song?
I had absolutely no idea. I kept hearing, I said, that sounds like me. So my brother, I had told my brother, the only one I had told, what I'd done. I went down to New Orleans and recorded this thing with Fats Domino. He said, that's got to be it. They keep saying Lloyd Price. That's you. That's who they're talking about, Lloyd Price. I didn't even know they was talking about me, and I'm hearing my name. But I never recognized, I never thought, because I never heard my voice that high pitch. I was just a kid. And I bet you 4 or 5 weeks after that, that's all you can hear around America, 24 hours a day, was Lord and Miss Claudie. Flipped it over. It was number one, number two, A and B, Mailman Blues and Lord and Miss Claudie. And the next subsequent 5 records, I Wish Your Picture Was You, right on down the line, both sides got the hitting.
Oh, yeah.
Was an amazing thing.
1952 was an unstoppable year for you.
No question. It was nobody. It was no Michael Jackson. It was no Elvis Presley. There was nobody. No Beatles, no Rolling. No. It was only Lloyd Price. And that kind of like integrated the music in this country.
And when you talk about the first rock and roll records, you know, it's always Good Rockin' Tonight, Wynonna Harris. It's, Rocket 88, Jackie Brenston and Ike Turner. It's Lottie Miss Claudie, Lloyd Price. It's always, you're right there with, well, what was the first rock? Well, you know, and you got that list. You know, on my show, we talk about that all the time. Well, what was the first rock and roll record? And, you know, it's I don't like to actually say, because there's no answer. They were all, you know what I mean? It was happening at the time.
That's correct.
And everything was happening. But Lottie Miss Claudie, like you said, I mean, it was unstoppable.
It turned the world around, Matt. Even though Roscoe Garden and Ike Turner, they had a great, Rocket 88 was a big record. And Wynonna Harris was a big record. But nothing turned the world around like Lottie Miss Claudie. Lottie Miss Claudie was that was a teenage record. They understood it. I was a kid in, where it really was big was in skating rings because that was the skate time. Everybody wanted to roller skate during that period. You could not go in a skating ring in America where Lord and Miss Claudie was not the song all night long. They skated to it. So that gave me a really good kind of, vision of where this music was going to go and how the kids was buying it and how they liked it. So, but I didn't hear, I heard other records there, but they didn't play no records like they played Lord and Miss Claudie.
It's interesting how Mailman Blues was the flip side, and you're talking about going overseas, and sure enough, what, 3 years later, you're overseas.
No, it happened before then. Actually,
when did you go over?
I went overseas, and it was about 2 years.
54.
I went over in November of 1954. And I recorded Lord and Miss Claudie came out, say, summertime 1952. Well, I had just about rewritten the whole music book in that period of time. And I was told by my draft board that I was causing such a ruckus with my music and integrating places that should not have been integrated with kids dancing together outside. Let me give an example, Matt. When I would go to town, they had, each town I went into, they had what they called was spectators. The white kids were spectators. And it was like, say, a black dance. There was always more spectators than it was black kids who came to see me. And that sometime it was 50%. But the white kids would always outweigh the black kids. I guess because economically they had the money to come. And so they start putting a rope in the middle of the buildings in North Carolina, South Carolina, Virginia, because they all wanted to be on the same floor. Back during that time, they would do the dances in armories, in the military armories they had upstairs. Well, there was never enough room for the spectators upstairs, so they had to start bringing them downstairs. So when they brought them downstairs to keep them from integrating, they had to put a rope in the middle of the floor, and the white kids would dance on one side, black kid would dance on the other side. Well, you can imagine how long that lasts. And there was never no more than one cop. And there was never no incidents. And but they that kind of, to me, was what we call integration. When that rope came down, these kids just started mingling. There was never no problem, never no fight, never nothing. If the cop wouldn't have been there, it was just would have been like any ordinary place in the world where people mix and respect each other as human beings. But that was the reason why I went into the service, because my music, as they said, was causing a ruckus.
Wow. I still can't believe it. That's the truth. But that's amazing. That's amazing.
Yes.
During the time, now see, I know that, well, you probably didn't even have a contract or anything with Specialty, right? Because, I mean, Roop just released the record and didn't, I mean, you obviously you didn't even know it was you. You didn't even know it was coming out. So obviously you didn't sign on a dotted line, or did you?
No. What happened was, Matt, was this. You're absolutely correct. I did not have a contract. When the record hit, Art Rude came down here because I was a minor. I couldn't sign a contract. He had to have my parents to sign for me.
And your parents were kind of strict, weren't they?
Yes, they were. You know, it was eight kids. Eight boys and three girls. It was 11 of us.
Wow.
So they had to be strict. I was the eighth kid, and I was probably what you call a good child. I worked with my father. I did a lot. I was working.
What was your father doing? What were you
doing?
My father was,
I guess what you call a jackleg plumber. He would put septic tanks and stuff in the ground.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
He would, you know, tie in drainage to the houses. He'd never done the internal work, but he always would do the outside work for the plumbers. And I was his helper. And he certainly did not want to get rid of me.
Yeah.
But when Art Rude came down and found out that I was not even 18 years old, not old enough to sign a contract, he came up with this lawyer, Charles Levy, who later became Fats Domino's manager and administrator, to take me across the river in New Orleans. We call it across the river, to a place in Gretna, Louisiana. And I was emancipated. I had my own power of attorney. My mother and father gave me power of attorney to do whatever I wanted to do with my life. I could do anything except vote. And that kind of like, I grew up, and it's kind of like part of my history of why I did all my own stuff. Because at the age of 17, I signed my own contract with Art Rude for 3%. I had the first 3% contract during that period. Art Rude, I think the record had sold maybe 50,000, and he'd seen it to be a big record, and he had no contract on me. And Don Roby,
he had to get you, because if he didn't have you, you could have gone someplace else and make an even bigger record,
absolutely,
right? So he had to get you under contract. So he gave you a good deal.
Yes.
To get you under contract.
Gave me three cents. He gave me three cents
on each record.
Yeah, when people was getting a penny, some wasn't getting nothing. So he gave me 3 cents a record. And Don Roby had Buffalo Booking Agency at the time, who had Gate Mouth Brown, Big Mama Thornton, Johnny Ace, and all these folk, rushed to my house to sign me to his agency, and he started thinking that I was going to be a big star. You're going to be bigger than anybody. White kids love you. Black kids love you. Everybody love you. So they kind of was hipping me, and I never drank, never smoked, still don't. I wanted to learn, and I was learning as these guys was talking to me how to do business. And from 17, I kind of like managed my own boat.
life I live. And it's a shame when I think of the life I live. Well, I may be too late, but I have only one life to give. Forgot to pray. Maybe somewhere down the road, Lord, I forgot to pray. When I fell down on my knees, well, I didn't know what to say. Lord, have mercy. Myself from shame. I'm gonna change my way of living. I'm gonna deliver myself from shame. Maybe I don't have the love of a mother. Well, maybe I am not the blame.
Oh boy! Well, back at that time, and you know, it's good to hear, good to get the actual information about how the contract came about and how you emancipated yourself. That's amazing. I mean, even at that time, you were making, you know, your own important decisions for your career. I mean, you know, nobody was like leading you around. That's great. Mm-hmm. But it's kind of funny because the history I've dug up on that time too is that Bartholomew was supposed to be, you know, he was working for Lou Chud at Imperial as the talent scout. But him and Lou had a fallen out, so he started doing some moonlighting on the side for Art to kind of sock it to Lou Chud, and that's when he discovered you.
Yeah.
You could have been on Imperial if he was...
That is totally correct.
I mean, not that that would have necessarily changed a whole lot, but I'm a label guy. I really like I like the label histories, and I love... just record labels, you know?
Right.
So for me, the record label is a lot more important to me than it might be to some people, but seeing you on Specialty and trying to picture you on Imperial, too. And, I mean, it's like, you know, not that far-fetched, but of course, Dave was like you mentioned, Smiley Lewis, the Spiders were big down in New Orleans.
Yeah.
And Shirley and Lee were big.
No question. Dave was the man.
All right, so you came out of the military. It's 1956, right?
Right.
You start your own record label, KRC?
KRC.
And what that stand for?
Kent Record Corporation. Ah. How that came about was I had written this song called Just Because, and I bought my contract back from Art Group, bought my contract back from Don Roby's Buffalo Booking Agency, because I wanted to do my own business. I'm just a kid. I said, maybe if the record hit for Don Roby and hit for Art Group, and hit for Lou Chud, it should hit for me. I had no idea what I was doing. I took an office at 913 U Street up there by Powers, right in front. It was a police station right in front. And I said, well, I'm going to do it right here. Now, Kent, Bill Boskent, was my tutor. He was my guy to finish my education with. And he was doing that when I recorded Lord and Miss Claudie. I had hired him. He was working at the Pentagon, and he'd take time off and go on the road with me so I can get all my stuff straight, you know, in my head about my education. So when I came out, we was discussing a record company. I wanted the record to be called Lloyd Price Records. So by him being my tutor, he says, you know, you got to have a short name. KRC. Mm. So I didn't like that much. So I discussed it, if you notice, on the records, Logan. Logan was the guy who remembered I was in Career. He was a promoter from West Virginia, and I had told him about my idea of having a record company back east because there were Don Roby and Dolphin of Hollywood. We know where Jesse Belvin was recording.
Oh, yeah.
I said, why don't I have a record company, you know, and do my own stuff? If I just sell around Washington, you know, I was real hot here, very popular in D.C., maybe I'll make enough money here to just do something else. My hopes was to sign Fats Domino, sign all the the New Orleans artists, you know, Professor Longhair. I certainly would have given them more than a penny or a nickel. You know, because half of it is yours. Whatever we make it together. That was my idea of a record company back during that time. But I knew, I had no idea what I was doing. And I had my cousin here, who was Larry Williams, was driving me. He was my chauffeur. Picked him up in New Orleans and brought him here. Living with me at my house when I wrote Just Because. So when I did Just Because and put the record out here, John Bandy and I forget who was in the box down at WST in Washington here, they went right on the record. Record just broke out. Swart Brothers, Maxi Waxi was starred on the record. My cousin Larry Williams asked me to loan him some money to go home. He lived in California at the time in San Francisco.
I smell a story here.
I said, okay. I gave him the money, and he went in straight to Art Roop. Told Art Roop he had wrote Just Because. And Art Roop recorded it. And now I can't go up against Specialty. At that time, Specialty was the biggest R&B company in the country. Atlantic, nobody was close to Specialty because they had all the gospel.
They had Little Richard.
Yeah, well, I had taken him, Little Richard, you know, and just before I went. In fact, I met Little Richard before I went in the Army and told Art Roop about Little Richard. I called him from Tokyo and told him he should have Little Richard send in some tapes.
Because Little Richard was on Peacock, right, in the early 50s.
Not then. He was on the road with Johnny Otis. But when he went to Peacock, I sent him to Don Roby. Remember, that was my agent. Little Richard had jumped on my stage in Augusta, Georgia, and he was the first time I'd ever seen a man with that much hair and in a chartreuse suit. You know, I'd never seen a yellow shirt. Yeah. I had never seen nothing like that. You know, I'm a country boy. Yeah. Stop banging on the piano, just like he does today. But it was exciting. People loved him.
Oh, yeah.
And I told this exact thing verbatim, what I'm telling you, I told Art Roop. You got to find this kid. And my little brother, Leo, you know, you'll notice on Little Richard record on Send Me Some Lovin', that's my brother Leo. I sent him the lyrics from Career. And he gave him to Little Richard, Send Me Some Lovin'. You know, but anyway, I won't.
So you wrote the song, but Leo gets the songwriting credit for that one.
Absolutely. And Leo finished it up and got Little Richard to do it.
Wow.
But what happened was when Larry Williams told Art Roop that he had wrote the song, Art Roop called me and told me, don't put the record out, you know, send him my invoices, because I'm doing his song, which was all wrong. Bill Boskin had Just Because copywritten. ABC had just came on the scene, ABC and Paramount, okay? Fred Foster, who, you know, had Monument Records, sure, at that time was a national promotion man. He came over to see me, said, listen, Art Roop's going to bury you with this record. I'm trying to do the record on my own. I don't know what I'm doing. And they offered me, listen to this, Matt. Back during that time, in 1956, offered me $25,000 advance for the record and a 10% royalty, and I keep the publishing.
Wow. That's a win-win situation for you.
Couldn't let it go.
You get national distribution.
Absolutely. And they told me, don't worry about Art Roop. They'll take care of that. And that's what happened. We outsold Art Roop. Larry Williams didn't get off, but it did build him a career. This is my first cousin.
Just because you left and said goodbye, do you think that I will sit and cry? Even if my heart should tell me so, darling, I would rather let you go. Just because you think
Omar, going around and breaking lovers' hearts. Before I let this thing happen to me, darling, I would rather swim the sea. I know you think good and pure was mine, but maybe